Well, here we are again, back for another official Scottish Rugby podcast. We're a bit thin on the ground. Jamie's on holiday this week. Al's still on holiday. Rachel and I are here, and we're joined, delighted to be joined by Kyle Steyne, Glasgow Warriors and Scotland back. I'll start with you, Kyle. How's this week going? Early part of the week, but how's things treating you so far this week?
Oh, hey, Moss. Yeah, thanks. Very good to be on. It was a good day for us. Great to be back at Scotstoun and only have a 5-minute trip in the car. As you know, the last 5 weeks we've been going to and from Murrayfield and Orium. So I think most of the boys were happy to be back, and we were welcomed by this consistent downpour. Just we had to go train outside again. So home sweet home.
How's it with you, Rachel? Is it as wet with you as it is with us?
This is the first time I think I've trained in rain in a very long time. Which is maybe a little bit smug of me saying that, but
is that because you've not trained, or is that because it's been so bright? It's been lockdown.
No, it is not because I've not trained. The weather has been really nice.
Well, Kyle, you said it is important to get back, isn't it? I know the 5 weeks you've been working hard with the individual fitness stuff and accommodated BT Murrayfield, but it does make a difference to get home. And you were saying that you're still, you know, can you regulate it quite heavily at Scotstoun? There's weights are out in the track, is that right? And you're not allowed into the facility itself. It's just in and out of the car and onto the training field, is that right?
Yeah, exactly. So again, it's, you know, you'd think you'd be used to it by now, but it's still quite weird going back to Scotstoun with all these strict regulations in place. So they've turned that indoor athletics track into all our gym bays. Luckily, we didn't have gym today, so we just came in, got tested, got the cotton bud up the nose, and then we were out onto the pitch for an hour in the rain and then home.
I've heard a few stories experiences. It's difficult, the testing, isn't it? It's not the most pleasant thing.
Yeah, exactly. It's not nice at all. I don't know how to describe it even. Just like there's just somebody like scratching at the front of your brain through your nose almost.
How often are you guys having to have the testing done?
Every Monday.
Every Monday, is it?
Yeah, so there's nothing like Sunday blues to know you've got to go in and run the test thing on Monday morning. But I suppose from a peace of mind point of view, it's good for the boys, you know, by Tuesday.
Yeah. So the results come back the day after, and then the rest of the week, you know, it's kind of based around that knowledge of knowing if there is unfortunately have a case, then you can manage it and isolate it as quick as possible.
Yeah, exactly. So Monday, they just keep us away from each other, not allowed to touch anybody, no contact, none of that. So that if there is a positive, then hopefully you just have to isolate whoever that is. And then from Tuesday and stuff, we're starting to bring in contact between like two or four of us maximum.
So what kind of stage of training are you guys at? Now, we spoke to Sam last week, but he's obviously based down south. We've got slightly different regulations. So what kind of stage are you guys now at in terms of contact and whatever else?
So this week back now at Scotstoun, so from tomorrow will be the first time we're allowed to have any sort of contact. And I think we're in groups of four they've put us in. And still no bone on bone, just on the bags. So with all the new breakdown regulations and all those kind of things that have come in, Danny's got us hitting the bags as often as we can.
Are you happy with your group of four?
I mean, I've got Squigsy, who loves the contact more than anybody else.
He does, yeah.
That comes barreling in there. And other than that, I've got Hugh Jones, and then one of the young boys, Ollie Mulville, that's coming through. So. It's just the three of us versus Squigs, pretty much, just to try and calm him down.
Squigs is Nick Grigg, for those who don't know, but he's a pocket rocket, isn't he? Flies into contact. Well, you can see that the way he plays, but the thing about Squigs is he does it with a smile on his face.
Yeah.
It's different, an aggressive look. It's just flying in, but he still has a smile on his face.
Yeah, exactly. So you don't know what to make of it. You stand up and you give him like the dirty eye, and he's standing up smiling at you. You're not
sure, you know? I know. We spoke about that last week with Sam. They were further ahead in terms of their contact, and they were back to full-on contact, and we spoke about how to manipulate a group of four. If you can choose your group of four for full-on contact, it's sometimes better, but coaches think differently, don't they? They like to put you against similar positions so you can push each other on or inspire each other, or sometimes it goes over the top.
But also at the same time, you don't want to mix too many similar positions, because if one of us tests positive, then you've got to isolate that whole four. It's the logistics have become quite interesting.
It is, that isn't it? There's so much planning in terms of a normal pre-season or a normal preparation, but to build in all the regulations and as well, it is a big undertaking for players, for coaches. It's a big discipline, but it's absolutely the right thing to do.
Yeah, oh yeah, no, for sure.
But what about stage? You, Rachel, you said you were training today as well. Where are you in the kind of return to play stuff?
We're slightly further ahead of the women up in Scotland at the moment. We are officially like returned to stage one this week. So we're back in small group training, obviously non-contact and gym sessions, etc. So we're quite lucky in that respect that we're kind of getting to do a little bit more, getting to do a bit more now. So I'm excited about this week. So we've got a lot of skill type sessions in, which has been completely gone for the last however long. So that'll be cool.
Nice. How far away are you guys from games?
So we don't really know yet, is the honest answer. It's still a wee bit up in the air. In terms of club stuff, that'll probably come back sooner, I'd imagine, than international and down in England. And then for Scotland, hopefully before the end of the year, but we don't know at the moment.
That's good. And you said, Kyle, as well, like different regulations or different, it's not really regulations or laws around the breakdown, around the contact that you'll be working on tomorrow, but there are changes. Coaches are always trying to evolve. There seems to be a desire to get, quite rightly, a quicker game or a quicker breakdown, what we've seen in the Super Rugby stuff in the Southern Hemisphere. So, well, tomorrow, yes, you'll have the element of contact and get that feeling of hitting bags and hitting people again shortly, but there'll be a technical change as well. It'll be quite difficult to kind of work on these nuances, but is there anything specific that you think will change or you're trying to do in terms of quickening the tempo or obviously for it to clear out?
Well, I suppose one of the things I've done as well is to try and make that breakdown a bit safer. I think, you know, try and take out all these side entries that might blow out someone's knee. So definitely the one thing that we're going to have to change that we put a big focus on was what we called man on fire. So carrying the ball into contact, you know, you being able to roll and sort of crawl forward before you have to place the ball to try and change the pictures. Whereas now they've changed that explicitly to one dynamic movement. So that's going to be quite interesting, I think, because
I think it's so easy to say that like that's something you've got to change, but when that's something that you've had drilled into you for such a long time, just second nature, it's such a difficult thing to drill out of you. I mean, we spent ages last season alone just drilling man on fire as well, that kind of spending time on the ground. So I'm nervous to get back and get pinged non-stop and training for doing it.
I know, but I'm sure as a flanker, you must be licking your lips at the thought, you know, that the ball won't change. You know, they've got one movement to make and you can be in there and over the ball.
Yeah, definitely. I think, to be fair, myself as a flanker, I'm not the most jackaling type of flanker, which is something I definitely need to work on. But I think there's players like we've got a wee seven, Rach McLachlan, who loves to jump on the ball quickly. And for the players like that, I think it's going to be, you know, brilliant for us. So, I think it's going to change the game quite a bit, for sure.
Yeah, the man on fire stuff, it's almost, it's that, you say, Kyle, that secondary movement. So it allows, when you're tackled, you can actually steal a yard or steal an inch or just twist and turn so that the defending players can't get on the ball and slow it down. Yeah. So does that mean, and it's a difficult one to referee that and officiate as well, because sometimes you can't help but move. And if you're allowed one, what's one movement? You know, you're not allowed to kind of get back up on your knees again. But I suppose, does it mean that the footwork and the evasion pre-contact or pre-tackle becomes probably double important, really, because you want to make the space before the contact or ideally run through the space so you don't have to be pinged for rolling about like a sheep in his back.
No, exactly. This is true. Bogues, Jason O'Halloran, just left us, and yeah, his favourite little phrase was footwork and fence, so I'm sure he'll be licking his lips at that as well. But we'll get in there tomorrow and see what JD and Danny have got planned for us.
It's quite a quick turnaround in terms of obviously new rules and only just getting back to contact now and having a game next month. How are you guys feeling in terms of that quite short turnaround in terms of getting back to contact and getting used to these new rules?
Yeah, it's quite an interesting one actually, Rach, because there's a little bit of humming and ahhing, you know, between us. You know, 4 weeks time we've got to go out there and play a full 80-minute game, and you kind of wonder how the bodies are going to cope. So I think we're all kind of hoping that as we start the contact now and get back into it and we get a feel, you know, we'll all have a better idea of where our bodies are at and then know how we'll cope with it. But I think at the moment there's just so much we don't know about where we're at or where our bodies are at, you know. So
I suppose that the comforting thing in many ways is that everyone's in the same boat.
Yeah.
You know, if you've been injured or if you've missed a period of the season, you come back in, maybe with these doubts and these concerns as well, but you're coming into a situation where everyone's been playing or most others have been playing consistently. So it's almost when we do come back in a month's time or whenever the start date is for different teams and players, everybody's going to be in that same boat of, I wonder what's going to happen. Will you have a chance to play against each other in any way, stretch or form, like before an actual league game as such?
Yeah, no, that's definitely the plan. So I think the first game's the 22nd, so probably 2 weeks before that. In that week, I think there's talk of, I don't know whether it's going to be like
3:20 classic.
Yeah, something like that. Which will really put a smile on Squiggy's face, I'm sure.
if it's ever off. But that is important, isn't it? It's that kind of graduated return for your body, your physicality point of view, but also your mindset point of view. It's such a long time since you've played.
Yeah.
And going into a league game, usually there are warm-up games or friendlies or, hit-outs before a meaningful league game that carries points, because Glasgow could still qualify. I think if they won both games with bonus points and Ulster didn't pick up anything, I mean, there is still an unlikely chance, but there's a chance.
Yeah.
So you want to be in tip-top physical and mental condition going into that first game against Edinburgh.
Yeah, no, exactly. And I mean, even more so, the 1872 Cup sitting at 1-1 at the moment. And we lost the last time at Murrayfield. So, there'll be a lot of boys wanting to go and make right down there.
And obviously, a new coach for you guys going into this as well. How are you feeling about that? Have you had much contact in terms of what you've done so far? Is that kind of what this next phase will be, working with them?
So I suppose, they've had to adapt massively. It was quite awkward or quite weird, saying goodbye to Dave Rennie on Zoom and then, welcoming Danny in on Zoom. So I think it was a little bit frustrating, I'm sure, more for them at the moment, in the beginning, they were struggling to get all their messages through. So I think slowly they've started to introduce, the direction they want to go. But I think mainly for these first two games, they want to keep the bulk of it the same and not change up too much, and try build consistency through that. And then I think slowly they'll start filtering in, more sort of the specifics of where they want to go.
I can imagine it's a really difficult time to take on a new role like that. We had a new S&C coach come in just at club just prior to lockdown, I think the week before. So he was having to program us over lockdown, having never met some of us and know anything about us. And it's such a difficult job. I guess at least he has an idea of what you're all about. But I don't envy them, that's for sure.
Yeah, but especially in S&C when everybody's got all their niggles in there.
Yeah.
Specifics.
Well, the first program he sent me out, I was like, no, sorry, can't do this.
But Danny is obviously known to you guys from the national squad, most of the squad, if not all of the squad, from the national perspective. But Johnny Bell, the new attack coach, is coming in as well. And he'll have some fresh ideas. He's a bubbly personality, he's an infectious personality. And I suppose has he been in with you guys maybe a week now? Was it last week? Was his first?
Like 2 weeks, I suppose. Two weeks. Sort of our last week of voluntary training, he came around to Murrayfield and sort of just introduced himself while we were in our base. And then last week was his first week that he could get us on the pitch and get a small amount of time with us.
He'll be excited about working with Glasgow, like as an attack-minded team, as you are, and as individuals. I'd imagine he'll be really excited about the opportunity to help add to that.
Yeah, no, I'm sure. And he was a defence coach at Gloucester when he was there. So I think, it sounds like he's really excited to be back on the other side of the game.
How have you enjoyed playing for Glasgow over the last couple of seasons? Has it been a bit different? Because obviously you came from the sevens stuff as well. So how's that been kind of transitioning back into 15s and playing for Glasgow?
Oh, I've loved it, Rachel. I arrived at a really good time, sort of February, at the beginning of this year. We ended up getting a good run of games in, played week in, week out, and in front of a sold out Scotland, which was awesome. And for me, before the sevens, I'd been in South Africa at the Griquas in Central South Africa, and we struggle for numbers down there in terms of fans. We probably get somewhere between 500 and 1,000. So then to come over here, first of all, go on the sevens, go on the circuit was awesome, and see the vibe and that sort of thing there. But then to come back into 15s and just feel sort of that infectious atmosphere at Scotstoun.
Yeah.
I think I only played my first game in the rain at the start of this. So, like you said, it just couldn't have been a better start. We had so many home games, all of them, in dry conditions. It was awesome.
And then Storm Kira came and show you what it can be like.
On a life definitely balances out. And then this season come around, and the first game we played in our white away kit was down in Zebre in like knee high mud.
The sevens was a sector that you really enjoyed, and that was the kind of your first involvement in Scottish rugby. How did that come around? Obviously, your mum's Scottish, isn't she?
Yeah.
And you grew up knowing a lot, supporting a lot around Scotland from overseas. But was there contact for a number of months before you joined the sevens? Or did you know there was something in the pipeline, or did it come out of the blue a little bit?
Oh, it came out of the blue, to be honest, Marcy. Like you say, you know, I played fullback at school, so I grew up watching you hunt the ball up and down the field, you know, wondering if how I'd ever get to play over here.
How can that thin guy ever play rugby?
Oh. And we were actually, I was at the Cape Town Sevens as a student. Mm-hmm. Had a couple of drinks in the stands on the Saturday, so woke up with a croaky voice on the Sunday and got a call from Scott Johnson, mm-hmm. Who was the director of rugby at the time, and he had been told, him and JD, John Diel, had chatted to my agent, and they had found out that I was Scottish qualified through my mum, like you said. Mm-hmm. So the first thing he asked me when he heard my voice was, were you in the stands last night? I said, yeah, I was.
good honesty.
Yeah, exactly. So that was December 2017. And then JD was really good about keeping in contact with me to set up like almost like a month trial.
Yeah.
I came over in February of 2018.
Yeah.
Did 3 weeks here in at Ravenscraig with the Sevens, and then did the Vegas and Vancouver legs with the Sevens team. Mm-hmm. And again, you know, JD just kept in touch with me saying that there was an opportunity for a Sevens contract, which then I probably signed, must have been around July-ish.
I remember you coming to Scotland and doing some stuff for Glasgow as well. Was that during your first trip over?
No, so then that was then as I'd signed permanently at the end of that year, I think October, then I came over early and did two or three weeks with Glasgow at the beginning there.
That's good. And then it was it accelerated pretty quickly from there. Good performances and then professional contracts and performances for Glasgow. The Pro 14 final must have been a highlight as well for Glasgow. Yeah. Although the disappointment of it, but personally to start and run on in that was pretty special.
Yeah, no, that was awesome. I've never seen that many people at a game, like you say. And every time you talk about it, you just kick yourself out because it all just aligned for us. You know, everything was building, and we had the final in our home city, and that still just eats away that we didn't manage to get it over the line. But you know, 57,000 people at Celtic Park. Mm-hmm. I can still remember getting off the bus, and I had my headphones on, and I looked out, and I was just like, "Whoa!" a lot of Glasgow people here. So I even said to myself, "Just take your headphones off and just enjoy this for 5 seconds. This is cool."
It's awesome, isn't it? Yeah. And you quickly following that was the kind of extended World Cup training squad last year at this time, which again, and things move quickly in sport, but it was quite a rapid kind of involvement with it with a national setup, and deservedly so. But that must have just added to the whole experience of playing so well and developing and feeling your form develop as you quite rattle quickly through the months.
Yeah, and I think definitely a big motivating factor through those last games, because obviously I didn't get named in the core, the original squad of 42. There were Gregor left two places, one back and one forward, that he said he was going to announce after the final, and he had phoned me when they announced the original squad and said that I wasn't being named, but I was one of the boys in contention for that spot. And one of the things he said to me was, you know, we want to see how you perform in playoff rugby, how you go there. So. Yeah, it was quite difficult actually to sort of, you know, you've always got that in the back of your head, but you've got to make sure that it doesn't take over the focus. But like you say, it just added to it, you know, after the final, then he phoned me the next day. Again, asked about the partying. I don't know what it is.
It's just your deep voice, Kyle. Put that down. What's your next excuse?
Off the back of that, you got your first cap, I think, this Six Nations just gone. Is that right?
Yeah. And again, I obviously didn't make the World Cup squad, but I think that whole experience just meant that I came into the Six Nations and I'm just way more settled, you know, and almost with a bit more confidence as to what to expect and what, you know, what was going to go on. And so then, you know, I wasn't involved in the first two, three games, but I kind of just, you know, just kept trying to put my foot in the door. And every time, you know, got off for Glasgow, just trying to make sure I was making a pest of myself for the coaches, you know. And it seems, yeah, eventually I'd irritated them enough that they...
The right way to do it, though.
Yeah.
There's a bit of talent and work rate and effort in there as well, I think. You're pretty hard on yourself.
Nah. But yeah, managed to sneak it in just in time. Supposed to be on the bench again for the Wales game, which was also just a weird experience there. Traveling down to Cardiff, and everybody's like, what are you guys doing? This game cannot go on. And we were like, please let it go on.
Was that game called off on the day? It was on the day, wasn't it?
So we were on the bus on the way to captains. We've been told repeatedly, you know, Wales rugby have guaranteed this game's going on. And then literally Gregor took the mic at the front of the bus on the way to captains, and he was like, sorry guys, game's off. And within like an hour, we had gone from preparing for captains to all of a sudden we had like an 8.5 hour bus trip back to Edinburgh.
It was a proper weird end to the tournament, wasn't it?
Yeah. Did you guys finish your games?
We only played two.
And one of those was postponed as well
because of the weather. So we played one game on time, which was the first one, and then we had postponed game against England, which got pushed back a day, so that was okay. And then our next three games got cancelled.
You travelled to Italy, didn't you?
Yeah, we went to Italy and got dragged out of bed on the day of the game and told it was cancelled. And then France game cancelled the night before, and then Wales game was cancelled well in advance, so that was okay. But yeah, it was quite a really strange Six Nations. But yeah, no, hopefully get them replayed towards the end of the year.
What about kind of off the field, Kyle? You were at Stellenbosch Uni in South Africa, is that right? What did you study out there?
So I studied a BSc, a science degree in physiology and biochemistry. So I wasn't quite smart enough to get into medicine, which was the ultimate goal. So I kind of did like the entry level one. So I got that behind my name, and then
so you finished that
in teaching.
So you finished at Stellenbosch. Is it true as well? I've heard for years, I don't know, this could be one of these facts that aren't true, but I'll ask you, you might know. Stellenbosch University is the rugby club that has the most teams in the world.
Yeah,
true. They had like 54 teams going out every weekend or something ridiculous. Is that true, or do you know the number?
It is true, but there's like a twist to it. So Stellenbosch Rugby Club has like 900 registered players, but what they don't tell you is that they incorporate sort of all the halls teams under their banner, because you have to
pay
Stellenbosch Rugby Club membership fees.
Right.
So that's where they get their massive numbers. The club itself, they play, you know, they play for Stellenbosch. I think they roll out 9 or 10 teams each week.
I was there because we used to have a standing joke with some of our friends. Imagine if you were on the bench for the 40 seconds this week. you had a cracking 15 minutes and you got promoted to the 41st. It must have been some notice board outside the rugby club on a Thursday night with the team sheets going up. But if it's not all one club, that makes perfect sense. But you studied over there, you finished your studies, and did you say so? You were starting to teach?
No, so then I did a postgrad in teaching.
Right.
My fourth year. So I did 4 years there, and then the fifth year I kind of had signed up for a diploma just to play in the uni comp, and then was lucky enough to pick up a professional contract or a Currie Cup contract off the back of that. So then I found out in like the February that I was leaving, so I didn't go to a class from about the first
online lectures.
Yeah.
And what about off the field in Glasgow? What keeps you busy away from Scotland?
well, from March through to, I suppose, August, September, I get on the golf course as many times as I can.
Nice.
You know, and that was a nice way to sort of meet the guys off the field when I first arrived. You know, Wilson gets you up standing on a chair your first day and fires all these questions at you. But one thing I said was, oh, I'm so keen to get out on the golf course. And I think the first time I went out with George Horn and Nick Frisby and Brandon Thompson. Mm-hmm. You know, Glasgow's got a good relationship with like Pollock and Douglas Park and Windy Hill. So, if it's dry, not like today, I'll be out on the golf course. Otherwise, Squiggy's organising coffees all over Glasgow. So do that. Otherwise, to be honest, a lot of us play PlayStation, which was a habit that... Yeah, isn't our best, and certainly You know, we put in some good hours over lockdown.
Who's two questions in that? Who's the top golfer in the squad? Is there a standout candidate?
I was going to ask the same thing.
That's a contentious one. I would say of the boys that all of us play together, me and George are probably on par. You know, if we're playing against each other, it's always a good battle.
And, George, forgive me if I'm wrong. I might be totally stereotyping here, but I'd imagine George would be fairly straight, knock it in the middle, short game's excellent.
Oh yeah.
you'll hit the ball a bit further, but maybe a bit more wayward. Would that be true? Or?
Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, no one has to talk about how competitive the Horns are. So yeah, we get fired up for those games.
And secondly, what's the game of choice on the PlayStation or the Xbox?
Call of Duty at the moment. We're all still into. Yes, we love going to war. A lot of the boys play FIFA. Well, I'm not massive on FIFA. And I've only got one TV. And my fiance, yeah, she sort of regulates the hours.
And she doesn't play Call of Duty then?
No. She hates the noise of it as well. She bought Christmas present was noise cancelling headphones that you have to listen to all the bombs going off.
Is it popular on the women's game, Rachel?
PlayStation?
Yeah.
Absolutely not.
No?
No.
On the trips and the international trips, does everyone know?
No, we actually tend to, we don't really use any kind of games on TVs or computers or anything like that. We tend to play like cards and stuff like that. More sociable.
Yeah. No,
we also have a team band who regularly get together and make songs and stuff like that. So no, we stray away from PlayStation and Xbox and all these things.
Are you in the band?
Loosely. I'm allowed to shake a maraca in that bit.
So Rachel mentioned your first cap, Kyle, against France, the last time, really, last game, BT Murrayfield. We mentioned it with everyone, and it's a similar answer about the culmination of the hard work and experience. But from your perspective, just winning that cap, what was the feelings and the emotion and the pride like, and the when you got the nod and you were coming off the bench in front of a full house?
Yeah, oh, it was awesome. Most, to be dead honest, you know, the first thing I probably felt on when I came on for Sean Maitland, and I think the first one was probably just massive relief. You know, I remember just like looking around, being like I'm on. It's ticked off kind of thing. But then I was also just real nervous in the stands before that. You know, as you come out after half time, you know, probably looking up at the clock every 15 or 20 seconds to see what the time is. And I said after the game, it got to a patch around 60 minutes where, you know, France were camped down in R22. The rain started picking up and all these sort of things, and the game started, you know, started evening out a lot more. And I started thinking, am I even going to get on yet? And I was just real thankful that Gregor said early on, you know, told Edgy, he said, tell Kyle the next stoppage is on. So I probably had about 2 or 3 minutes to get ready. My heart rate shot through the roof, and then, yeah, got the first involvement in on the pitch, and it was just awesome. Dad managed to get up, which was really cool. Mm-hmm. South Africa.
Yeah, it's excellent.
And again, we got so lucky with the weather. It was a dry day. Mm-hmm. And I think probably the best part about it was that I got to make my debut at Murrayfield, you know. Mm-hmm. I'd watched all the Six Nations games the year before. And you know, each time I just found, you know, saying to myself, like, I'm so done wondering what this feels like. You know, I want to know what this feels like.
Mm-hmm. Must have been nice to come away with a win as well.
Yeah, no, it was awesome. Especially, you know, the way our Six Nations had gone, you know, I probably felt like we'd performed better than what the results were saying. So, you know, we came off a good win in Italy, and then, you know, to get a win at home was awesome.
Who was you came on the right wing, didn't you? Who was, I can't remember, I should do. Who was the opposite man? But did Fiku move out to the wing, no?
Fiku, sure, but you're testing me now as
well. I think he started in the midfield. I can't remember if he moved out to the wing or who. Yeah. You remember who your opposite number was?
I think it would have been Fiku. Teddy Thomas was on the other side.
That's right. And he went off, and I think they made one or two changes. And I think Fiku, who's just any time, as you know, through Sevens as well, like you play France, their ability to just, you know, spark something is totally unique. And you're right, at that point in the game, I think they came back into it a little bit. But yeah, and you feel quite exposed sometimes in the wing when you come on, you're fresh. Some of the guys inside you are a bit more tired. The gaps get you know, closer together for in terms of defence. It leaves the person on the end of winger so much more space to cover on your own against a Fiku or a Booty, I think, was at fullback, and Terry Thomas, as you say. So it's almost in that position, just commentating through the game and making sure that you're part of the system, because the urge is to do it on your own, but it's so dangerous against the French side to kind of try and solve it on your own. You need to work together, don't you?
No, for sure. And that's where it's good to have someone like Hoggy behind you there. You know, he came straight up to me, and then he's just in your ear the whole time as well, keeping you calm and that sort of thing. Sometimes screaming in your ear.
Screaming. Sometimes not as calm as other times with Hoggy. I think anybody who's been in that position, Rachel, you'll be the same. Any teammate, when you see somebody win their first cap, you feel this. It's not a duty, it's just a responsibility that you want to make sure that everything's going to be fine.
Yeah, definitely.
So you find yourself helping these guys, and quite often the first cap are just turning and says, "Hey, calm down, I've got this, it's okay. Cool." And they're the calmest person in the environment.
No. Yeah, I think because everyone feels like the same thing, like when they see them come on, they feel proud and they want to make them feel good. So then they end up having 14 people come up to them and say, you're fine, you've got this. And they're like, yeah, I know. So we obviously talked a little bit around your sevens career and stuff. How do you feel that being a part of the sevens program and playing a bit of sevens kind of helped you progress through your rugby and into a kind of international 15s player now?
I think probably mentally was where it helped most, Rachel. You know, it's such a harsh environment, those sevens weekends. You know, you got 3 games the first day, 3 games the second day, so it's about, you know, being able to sort of switch on, switch off, and then switch on again. And the beauty of sevens, and you know why it's so attractive to watch, is because anything can happen. And so to get yourself mentally ready, you know, 3 times a day, where you have to absolutely be at your best. You know, otherwise, if you slip up once, then you lose, and then you're out the pool, and then sort of all of a sudden you're in the back draw. So I think sort of just, you know, that baptism of fire almost mentally. You know, were probably the biggest learnings I got. You know, I did exactly what Mossy's talking about in the 15s game. You know, I got so excited going on the first time, rushed out of the line against Kenya. You know, got stepped, and you know, he was straight through under the poles. You know, and then that's the first clip that comes up on the review screen. there were a few hard lessons learned in sevens. You know, and I actually had a quite a tricky start. You know, I just didn't get as much game time as I was hoping for, and really struggled to get on the pitch. And you know, and then 7 minutes, 14 minutes flies by, and then all of a sudden you're only on the pitch for 1 or 2 minutes. And you know, and like Mossy says, it's so hard not to go into this mode where you just want to make something happen in these 2 minutes. So I would say almost, you know, it was a lot of maturing that you do in that time, you know. And then came back into the 15s, and you know, kind of felt like I'd learned, you know, a lot of good lessons.
The nature of the sevens environment means you have to learn really quickly as well. You know, we've spoken about this often on the podcast about how great it is in terms of your skill development. For example, you've more space to cover on defence, so it's harder to defend. You're probably under more fatigue, more often than not. But I do genuinely think that the mental side is one of the biggest factors, positive factors of playing sevens, because exactly as you just described, and also in stadiums full of people.
Yeah.
You know, so it does actually, it ticks so many boxes in preparation for the 15s game, physically, but also, as you say, mentally, it is really important. And you've already given 2 or 3 really good examples of where that helped you when your number went up, you know, against France 2 or 3 months, or 4 or 5 months ago. And you, having those experiences, dealing with it, it's a brilliant development tool. Not for everyone, front five may argue with me, but it's a brilliant development tool for young players and, you know, the world over.
No, exactly. And I actually almost wonder now, you know, from South Africa, we play 15 men from, like, you know, from 8, 7 or 8. Mm-hmm. And I always say to a lot of people now, you know, I wonder what would happen if you let kids play sevens, you know, till they were 10, 11, just because, like you say, from a pure rugby perspective, you know, the highlights or the spotlight it puts you in with all your skills.
Mm-hmm.
And you know how there's no, you know, there's no real set positions, there's only really set piece, and then you're all sort of the same player. So skills like that.
I'd never played sevens, played 15s until I reached high school. All our development was sevens. What about you, Rachel? Did you Do sevens as well.
I was about to say, I'm not sure many forwards would have this same opinion that we should play sevens. I have played social sevens, but never anything slightly serious.
That's going to be one of the hardest games you'll ever play. It's no, brutal, isn't it? And, you know, just physically, you just long. Every time you go to a sevens tournament, oh no, first game. You know, first game. And you just get your second wind. And if you're lucky, it probably comes some point towards the end of the first tie, but you know by the second tie you've blown your lungs out, and it does get slightly easier, but there's very little preparation for how horrible it's going to feel for the first 14 minutes.
You're selling it.
I know, exactly. Got to be truthful. Got to feel truthful. It can't all be bells and whistles, eh?
We've obviously talked about loads of stuff that you've achieved in the last kind of year to 2 years. In terms of looking forward now, have you got any goals for the next year in terms of both club and country?
Yeah, well, I'd love for Mossy to teach me how to kick, so I didn't need it.
You're a quick learner. We'll be fine. You can do that. Hey, he's joking. He can do that as well.
Oh, sort of consistency is just not there. But, great question, Rachel. I suppose, you know, you really want to I want to impose myself on the national setup now, you know, and the competition sort of centre back three side at the moment is immense. So I suppose the first goal is to just get back playing rugby. You know, we all just want to be back out there on the field.
Yeah.
And it's about, you know, grabbing these opportunities now. You know, hopefully, you know, we've got a good number of test matches coming up in the next short little while, you know, the rest of this year and the beginning of next year. So just want to put my best foot forward and you know, try build up as many appearances for Scotland and Glasgow that I can.
Where do you see, you know, you have the ability to, so you grew up mainly as kind of fullback, didn't you? Played consistently well on the wing, started the Pro 14 final as a centre, I think at 13. You are really comfortable in all those positions. Is there one you prefer or one you don't prefer as much? Or is there, when you're setting goals and aims, is there a position that you don't have to tell us, but you would really like to go after over the other ones?
Yeah, I still want to go after the 13 jersey. 13. And you know, if anyone asks me, I tell them that. So, you know, both Danny and Gregor know that. And they both tell me where I stand on in their eyes. And I think the gap between sort of how much I like centre and how much I like wing is you know, probably almost even now. And I think that's got a lot to do with the way that Glasgow and Scotland use their wingers. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a much more free reign role on attack, and you know, so many involvements. And both Glasgow and Scotland, you know, see the back three as a big strength and looking to incorporate that. So from that point of view, you know, I've really enjoyed being able to grow my game as a winger. Mm-hmm. And you know, probably next on that list is to develop a more consistent kicking game, you know, and just keep adding sort of strength to the bow.
We spoke last week with Sam about understanding roles when you cover, or you can play different positions, or you're covering different positions going into a game, whether starting or on the bench. And we spoke about the importance of kind of line out really for him between second row and back row. And it's the same for especially 13 or wing. It's such a difficult position to defend in. And you know, you might have to change position during the game, and then likelihood towards the end of the game might be that crucial moment where you have to get the call right in attack or the call right in defence. So it's extra work and preparation when you play multi-positions, isn't it?
Yeah, no, it certainly is. But I think, you know, if you can get that understanding of both, it almost, you know, they start to complement each other, because then, you know, I'm on the wing and, you know, then I know how the 13 may be thinking or what he's feeling, you know, and so you tend to like start using both to help you help you with that understanding of everything.
Well, it's been great. We've actually spoken for quite a while, Kyle. Really enjoyed it. Really enjoyed having you on and getting your insights into sevens, 15s, Glasgow, Scotland, and so just really appreciate your time and thanks for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me, guys. Yeah, really good to get on. I've enjoyed listening to the podcast as it's going on. So, cheers, guys.
Well, that was great, wasn't it? We Rachel have a good old chat with Kyle Steyn, somebody who comes across really well. We said it last week about Sam, but just you can hear how determined he is, how driven he is, the strong mentality he has. But he's just another polite, decent guy who's working really hard.
Yeah, he seems like a really nice guy, and it's interesting because he's had quite a varied journey, but also to kind of hear the learnings that he's taken from that journey as well is really interesting. I think one for young players definitely to listen into.
It's a good point you make about the kind of varied journey, because I think it makes a more rounded player. You know, yeah. Whether it's study, whether it's, you know, moving in South Africa and playing for different clubs in South Africa. He spoke about how they struggle for a deep, meaningful support there. Then the kind of, yeah. the learning he got from playing in front of big crowds in the Sevens and for Glasgow. He's, as you say, studied as well. He's done a postgraduate. So that kind of rounded approach, that varied approach, is something we try and promote, really, for our players to do, because if there's only kind of one strand of rugby and that's it, you don't develop as well, do you?
No, 100% you don't. And there's so many learnings he'll probably take from those different areas of his life that will benefit him as a rugby player, and vice versa. And at the end of the day, with rugby, you just never know when your last game might be as well. So I always, like, whenever I chat to some of the younger girls, I think it's so important that you have other stuff going on in your life, because it is quite a danger when things get taken away from you and you don't know what's next. So I think, you know, hearing about all the stuff he's done along the way is amazing, and he's a really good example for young rugby players.
The other wee thing I thought was, will we see a change in how the game's played, or will there be any differences, because it's been such a long time since we've played? He spoke about that contact work, about some of the regulations not really changing, just being enforced more.
Yeah.
And the big topic for me is the creation of space and how we create space. And he spoke about his footwork and defend. And are there any cracking ideas out there for creating space in the rugby field? You know, coaches will think of them, but then they're usually quite conservative, because they don't like straying too far from trends. But I don't know. Would you have any ideas on space creation, or do you think it's worthwhile?
I'm probably not someone that looks a lot of space. Yeah. I tend to run away from it.
That's the point, though. That's
no,
the point.
I know. No, I know. No, I don't know, but I think it would be interesting. I think there's also a lot you can take from other sports as well. Mm-hmm. You know, like watching other sports and seeing how they do it. And their sport's obviously different in the sense of different type of ball and how they pass it around. But I always think that we should take more from watching other sports as well.
Mm-hmm. No, it's just something that's a personal thing that's hanging on. Mm-hmm. How can we create more space? There's law trials going on at the moment in Super Rugby. The kind of most famous one, really, or the most well-known one, maybe, is the 50-22 law, where if you kick from inside your own half and the ball bounces out, it touch in the opposite 22, you then are rewarded with throwing. And similarly, if you kick from inside your 22 and it bounces out over halfway, you're rewarded with throwing. So the idea is to drop defenders into the backfield, take more defenders away from the front field, because it really should be quite easy pickings for a decent kicking game team to find that space. So that, I've been watching kind of the Australian stuff with that. It's been some good examples of it. So that is one way of thinking. But if anybody does have any ideas to we can take forward or debate or discuss, because I think it's important that we still look to create space rather than get a bit too physically orientated. But who knows? Who knows? Three or four weeks' time when the games kick off, maybe we'll get a different view.
It'll
be worth getting in touch if anybody has some worldly ideas. And we'll get Al and Jamie to discuss them when they're back. Maybe they'll have the ideas, Rachel.
I somehow would be very surprised.
Well, thanks again for listening to the official Scottish Rugby podcast. Thanks again to Kyle Steyn for his insight, and really enjoyed his chat. Next week, we'll be back to bring you news from the Edinburgh Rugby Camp, and we look forward to bringing that to you.